Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history.
There is some rain and thunder, so it might or might not come onto the recording. There's a bit of thunder there. So today what I'm going to discuss are some things from when I started my activism. There are some lessons that I learned 25 years ago when I started activism, and these are the things that I want to discuss. I've got two particularly important things that I want to discuss with whites from lessons I learned back then. This is the first video, but I've got another video with a really wild story on it. There are things that I have discussed before, but I've never actually shown people the proof of what was really going on. And that's what I also am going to put into these videos, because I've been digging through my old archives and I have found bits and pieces from that time, because there is very little evidence of what actually took place back then. Now that I've got my History Reviewed TV up and running, and you can go to the History Reviewed TV page on my website, you can search for all kinds of things. And I myself am using it in order to get old things that I did a long time ago and to go through them. And in some cases, I will be putting links below my videos to refer to old things that I discussed, because I just spoke about stuff, but I didn't have any images or photos or videos even of the events of that time. And Africa, Southern Africa, 25 years ago, in the year 2000, before 9/11, Africa and Southern Africa was very different to what it is like now. We've had 25 years of all kinds of things that have happened. And I must say, I'm delighted that I'm still around 25 years later to see the changes that have taken place. And I want to give you a bit of a feel for what the whites and blacks were like back then and what it's like now. And you will start to see some differences. But the purpose of today's video is to tell you some things about white people. Even though this whole freaking video is about blacks and the events of that time, I want to tell you about white people, because it pertains to the current white right and the way that whites are in the white right today. And I'm going to tell you some things that I learned when I was just getting off the ground and trying to quickly find my feet in some kind of political activism. I'd never expected to do political activism. It had never been my intention to become a political activist or to even try political activism. I'd never imagined ever in my life that I would suddenly get so angry that I would just throw things aside and I'd just say, fuck this shit, I'm going to start making noise because I can't take this crap anymore. And that's what happened to me. It was a sudden thing. It happened out of the blue. I had no political experience. I had not dealt with anybody. And I kind of made it up as I went along. And that's why I ended up doing some of the stuff that I'm going to show you about. But in the process, I learned some interesting things. And there are some good lessons for white people from this. So in the year 2000, and in the 1990s even, when the whites of South Africa were forced against their will to hand over power to the blacks, we were inundated with a lot of American and Western and British liberal propaganda. And so the whites who lived in Zimbabwe were the whites who decided to stay with the blacks because the West had assured them that, you know what, all is good when you coexist with blacks. Don't be like those Rhodesians. Don't go fighting. Don't be like those apartheid South Africans who are suppressing the good black people. Don't be a racist. Work with the black people. It's going to work out. So 2/3 of the whites in Rhodesia did not believe that, and we all left. 2/3 of the white Rhodesians left, and that included large numbers of British, English Rhodesians. They came to South Africa. Large numbers of British Rhodesians ended up in South Africa. They probably never imagined that they would come to South Africa themselves, but they left too. But there was 1/3 that remained behind. Some of them were English, some of them were Afrikaans, but the Afrikaners only made up a small percentage of the Rhodesian population anyway. But there were some Afrikaans people there too. So when all this stuff went down, life was quite different then. The whites in Zimbabwe were actually quite well off. They had made money. There were some of them who'd been farming, who'd made a lot of money. Others had made money in business, etc. So when the farm invasions started, it caught all the whites off guard, or rather most of the whites were caught off guard, and people still had some money, and people were still believing in liberal kind of things. And that is true for whites in South Africa and whites in Zimbabwe. People believed that, you know, the liberal way is the only way because that's what we were inundated with. And they had quite a bit of money and they were able to do many things. Also, Zimbabwe as well as South Africa were much more functional than they are today. They were much more functional than they are today. So everybody had more money in South Africa, in Zimbabwe. Things were running so much better back then. You could jump on a plane, go places. Everything was a lot better than it is today. And so people had a different kind of a spirit. And the first thing that I want in today's video is I'm going to play you a little song. And this was a song written by whites in Zimbabwe, and they decided to write a little song that mocked Robert Mugabe, and they got this song to my website, African Crisis, because I was the main guy in South Africa who was talking about these things that are going on, and they managed to get this song to my website, and we loved it. And the whites on my website, whites were pouring in and people were very fascinated by the things that I was saying. And then, of course, there were large numbers of people from America and elsewhere who just couldn't believe the things I was saying. When I said farmers are being killed in Zimbabwe, farmers are being killed in South Africa, people just didn't believe this stuff. But this little song is a song from the time when whites in Zimbabwe were in much better shape, and some of them made this little song. This song actually comes in two versions. There's a shorter version of the song. This is the longer version, where they went and they added some more to the song. Right at the back, they are mocking the blacks in government, and they're mocking the blacks in the Zimbabwean government. They are saying that they've been smoking skaaf. Smoking skaaf is basically, in South African terms, it's smoking what's known as dacha, or for the rest of you outside Africa, it's known as marijuana, weed. So smoking skaaf is the same as smoking weed. And these Zimbabwean whites are using some South African terms in this song. So this is what whites were like in Southern Africa 25 years ago. And for a couple of years, there was a lot of activity between whites in Zimbabwe and whites in South Africa. And people from there came here, and I met lots of them. And there were also blacks fleeing from Zimbabwe to South Africa, and I ended up meeting lots and lots of people. And so I was meeting whites from Zimbabwe who would then introduce me to blacks from Zimbabwe. And that is how I started meeting all kinds of people. And people were trying to do activism back then. And it wasn't bad, but the governments in Africa were against activism, and they were trying to shut everybody up, which you will learn more about. Anyway, here is the song about Mugabe. Listen and enjoy. This is one of the rare things from that time. I have got some other rare things from that time. I'm probably the only person who's got any of this stuff at all. There's other stuff I haven't shown you that nobody has. And regarding this little video, I did not put this video together. This is the video that they made at some point and sent it to me. And in this video, you'll see photos and you'll also see lots of cartoons. All of those cartoons are from Africa. They are from newspapers either in South Africa, or in some cases, they are from foreign websites, but there are also cartoons that come directly from Africa. And of course, the key person here is Robert Mugabe. And I know the song as the Robert Mugabe song. That's all I know in terms of a name. But they came out with this thing very quickly, within a couple of months of the blacks coming after the white farmers. And initially, I only had it in audio format, but this version is the last version, and it came in a video that I got from them. But all these guys are gone now. They disappeared a long time ago. So anyway, here is the song.
I'm a psychopath, my name is Bob Mugabe. I'm the number one banana in Zimbabwe. I haven't got a clue, so I blame everything on you and the whiteys from London to Harare.
Bob's your uncle, Bob's your auntie, Bob's your man and Bob's your dad. Bob's the long-lost relative you never knew you had. He's mean, he's rude, he's ugly, and he's been there too long now. He stole the last election and he's married to a cow. PW's black brother, he's the man that time forgot. If he ever does any wrong, it's all a racist plot. The father of the nation who abuses all his kids. He took a wealthy country and he put it on the skids. Down near the tip of Africa, there's terror in the air. A tin pot tyrant rules the roost, his country worse for wear. Bob Gabriel Mugabe got a lot to answer for, 'cause he the presidential crook who can defy the law. Nobody goes to work today 'cause unemployment's rife. Moyo lies, the press complies, Bob's president for life. Of course he won't capitulate, of course he won't resign. There's plenty diamonds in the Congo he still plans to mine. Bob's your uncle, Bob's your auntie, Bob's your man and Bob's your dad. Bob chased away the farmers, but he's really not that bad. Who cares about economy, the famine or the war?
Bob's say anytime we like, we come back, we take more. Democracy, Zimbabwe style, oh what a wondrous thing.
Gaddafi pays our petrol bills,
and Becky lets us sing. Bob cook the books, Bob steal the show, Bob make sure that he wins. Some say that Bob the punishment for all Africa's sins.
Homophobia, megalomania, ignorance and cheek. Hypocrisy, dishonesty, dictator of the weak.
What human rights? What dignity? The dignity is mine. Play the game, do things my way, I'm sure we get on fine.
So what's this quiet diplomacy? How long must people weep? It can't be right to let Bob run Zimbabwe in his sleep, 'cause he's run it into ruin,
and he's run it into debt. If only Bob Mugabe hadn't run for president.
The lands would all be planted, there'd be food upon the shelf. The UNA that does arrive, he keeps all to himself. We wouldn't have to queue for fuel, we'd all be pretty safe. From Sanu thugs with bloodshot eyes, from smoking too much scape. What brought him to our country? Someone throw the bastard out. Perhaps a gay white farmer could come give the clot a clout. And when his days are over and they've locked him in the cell,
we'll bring out our next single, Mugabe, go to hell!
The lands would all be planted, there'd be food upon the shelf. The UNA that does arrive, he keeps all to himself. We wouldn't have to queue for fuel, we'd all be pretty safe. From Sanu thugs with bloodshot eyes, from smoking too much scape. From Sanu thugs with bloodshot eyes, from smoking too much scape. From Sanu thugs with bloodshot eyes, from smoking too much scape.
So what's scape, eh?
Make it before the cops take it!
So that little song was whites from Zimbabwe mocking the leader Mugabe. And the whites went and they fought their own little propaganda campaign, which I still want to show people more about. The last whites of Zimbabwe fought a little propaganda campaign. They tried many things. But in the end, all this farm attack stuff was the beginning of the end of the whites. However, Zimbabwe itself has never recovered from that. So I am very happy about that. Zimbabwe never recovered from it. To this day, they are still plagued endlessly by all kinds of problems that came from that time. That once they got rid of the farmers and got rid of the whites, they themselves never recovered. They could never match what the whites had done. Now the blacks have got everything, they're in charge of everything, and they are struggling. And this is despite getting all kinds of foreign aid from America. They used to get food even. They used to even get free food, etc. So there's a lot that they got, which the whites of Rhodesia never got, and the whites of Rhodesia still rot. I want to now tell you about the blacks that I ended up being involved with the most, because lots of interesting things came out of that. And if you look on the screen in front of you, those photos there, like that photo of that white farmer standing behind the shattered windows of one of the buildings on his farm. I've got lots of other photos about what happened on that farm. The blacks came, they smashed in the various buildings, they set things on fire, etc. This was just one of the many things that they damaged on that farm. And you can see these are screenshots from ETV in South Africa at the time. And there, if you look on the top right, you'll see there's another one where you can see also damage on a farm after these blacks had been doing their stuff. And they did this to hundreds of farms. In the end, most of the 5,000 white farmers were gone. So these things were happening, one thing after another, early in 2000. And then I started my website, and then I carried on with this stuff. I started work on my book, and then as my website got more popular, then people started contacting me, including whites from Zimbabwe. And this led to me meeting many people from Zimbabwe. Eventually, I met farmers, I met all kinds of whites who were regularly coming from Zimbabwe to South Africa, and then I'd talk to them, or we'd have dinner, etc. And one woman who was very active was an English woman named Jenny. I can't remember her surname now, but her name was Jenny. I found her details. She's even on Wikipedia. Her name is Jenny Williams, and I met her, and I dealt quite a lot with Jenny Williams. The photo on there is not that flattering. Looks like she gained a lot of weight. But Jenny Williams, I think most of her family left Zimbabwe. And she runs an organization called WOZA, Women of Zimbabwe Arise. And I see that she claims that her ancestry is English and that there is some Matabele in there, but it sounds kind of distant, meaning she's got a little bit of black ancestry. But when you see her, she's a white woman, but maybe there is now something about some kind of distant non-white somewhere in her ancestry. And she's clearly still linked to the whole multiracial thing. Some of these people, especially these women, they just can't get away from it. Anyway, Jenny Williams introduced me to people. And among the people that she introduced me to was the guy that I'm going to speak about, JJ Sabanda. And JJ was one of the blacks, and he started a thing called CZA, Concerned Zimbabweans Abroad. And he was actually quite an intelligent black. And he even came from the area close to where I grew up, which was Marandelas in Rhodesia. And this JJ, like all the other blacks, like all the other people involved, they'd all been doing well under, let's call it, liberalism. Whites and blacks working in Zimbabwe, farmers being the driving force of the economy. Things were going well. And so JJ Sabanda, for example, had a small business. And he'd been making money in Marandelas. And Marandelas was a small town that I went to many times. My brother had a business there. He also had a farm there. He and his wife lived there. My sister and her husband lived in Marandelas. Her husband worked for the brewery there because there was a big brewery that made beer for blacks. So I went to Marandelas a lot of times. Anyhow, Jenny Williams introduced me to JJ Sabanda, and JJ Sabanda was now here in South Africa, and these blacks and whites were interacting, and they were interacting with liberals in South Africa, and the liberal journalists were white, and liberal radio stations were interested in these things. So it was a very different environment to the current white right. It was a very different environment, being among all these liberals interacting with blacks, and everyone's talking to each other, and they are going to do things, okay? They're going to do big things. They are going to use activism and liberalism, and they're going to sort out Mugabe. I was a skeptic, but I got involved because these people were giving me information, and I was getting first-hand information from these people. And so it was very useful for my website, so I could write articles on my website, etc. But it led me into a number of adventures as a direct result of this. So I was just trying to get information, meeting people, trying to get data that I could put on my website, and that was my purpose. I wasn't part of these organizations. And South Africa and Zimbabwe were way more functional back then than they are now. And the liberals and the governments were in better shape. Everybody had a lot more money than they have today. There were things that were working nicely. We hadn't had electrical problems yet, though the electrical problems would come later. And the whites in Zimbabwe, many of them had made a lot of money. There were some people I met, one particular farmer that I met, who made an incredible amount of money. He was a multimillionaire in rand terms and probably almost a millionaire even in US dollars. He made a lot of money. And so here were these blacks and whites and liberals, and everyone's talking to each other and things are moving, and you could get access to all sorts of people. I even went at a point and met a BBC journalist in his office. So I saw a lot of different things. And if you look on the screen in front of you, on the bottom right is a book that someone wrote. It's called Zimbabwe's Exodus. Now remember, there were about 100,000 whites in Zimbabwe, but there were 13 million blacks. And now with these farmers being destroyed, this would destroy everything. And I think eventually the vast majority of the whites left. There can't be many whites left in Zimbabwe anymore, hardly any. So it wasn't just the farmers who left, the 5,000 farmers. It was the majority of the whites were going to leave over the next 10 to 15 years. But millions of blacks were going to leave. And already the first blacks were starting to move to South Africa shortly after that. And now, 25 years later, there are lots and lots of Zimbabwean blacks still in South Africa. Because that whole event of kicking out the whites and destroying the whites had huge knock-on effects for the whole country. So when they knock out a couple of whites, the whole freaking country goes for a loop. And to this day, despite all kinds of support, money, aid, etc., that they still get, they have been struggling to survive. The country never again came even close to what it was in the 1990s. So you should see the 1990s up until the year 2000 as the high point of liberalism in Southern Africa. That was the high point. And from the time that Mugabe went after the farmers, it was all just downhill. So if you look on the screen in front of you, you'll see that I scanned a bumper sticker for a car. And that bumper sticker says, "Save Zimbabwe to save South Africa." And that bumper sticker is a bumper sticker that I still have. That was one of many things that J.J. Sibanda produced. And he was giving it away and using it for publicity here in South Africa. So they'd give it to whites, give it to others to put on their cars so that they had this message, "Save Zimbabwe to save South Africa." The message being, what has happened in Zimbabwe is going to happen in South Africa. And here you had blacks and white liberals coming to tell the whites of South Africa, you better watch your government because your government could destroy you like they're destroying us. So that was a good kind of theme that did the rounds a lot back then. But as I was running my website, I had all kinds of people contacting me, and I got involved in some very strange things. So here I am trying to run my little website. I've got some followers and it's slowly growing, but many different people came to my website and then one thing would lead to another. And one of the strangest things that happened that I was involved in, and unfortunately I can't find any documentation for it except a very, very faded piece of paper, is something I'm about to show you. On the Wikipedia page for Jenny Williams, I actually found this photo. And there is Jenny Williams on the left. So there she is. She had gained quite a bit more weight since the time that I remember her. And like these sort of liberal whites, she's one of these white women that just cannot let go of the whole black thing. And she's remained a, quotes, loyal Zimbabwean. So what happened here is that her organization, and make no mistake, it's her organization, Jenny Williams started this thing. It's called WOZA, Women of Zimbabwe Arise. And the caption for this on Wikipedia says, Jenny Williams left and Magodonga Malangu, that black woman next to her, received the Robert F. Kennedy Human Rights Award from United States President Barack Obama on 23 November 2009. So there you see her with the non-white president of America in 2009. That is the recognition she got for WOZA. So keep this in mind because you'll see this is also relevant to the story that I'm going to tell you. But there you can see, she started the organization, but because she does stuff for blacks and she interacts with blacks, if you look carefully there on her wrist, you'll see she's actually got a sort of bracelet, but it's like an African bracelet. And I noticed that her hair is very different. And I saw that on Wikipedia, they say that she's got some kind of Matabele linkage. Well, I saw her as a white woman. You can see she looks white. But maybe in some distant past, maybe someone decades ago in her family married a black or something. But she's basically British, okay? And so she sticks it out with this stuff. And she stays in there, and she even stayed in Zimbabwe. I think even her husband left, and she stayed in Zimbabwe, carrying on with this Woza thing. And there you can see, got recognition from the United States government for her good work. But anyway, this is Jenny Williams, and she's the one who introduced me to JJ Sabanda. And I think she's still running Woza to this day, though I can't imagine that Woza's going to change Zimbabwe. It's 25 years later. I've mentioned, with regard to Hitler, herds of humans. Humans as herds. Well, when there is chaos and things are changing and this thing happens and that thing happens and someone goes and talks, it has a knock-on effect. And one of the strangest things that happened when I was dealing with JJ Sabanda and his blacks was that another bunch of young blacks came to me. So what had happened was the whites in Zimbabwe had approached blacks in Zimbabwe in the early 1990s. And between them, they agreed to start a political party. And they called this political party MDC, Movement for Democratic Change. And MDC was basically whites with money and skills and organization, and blacks being the face of it. And these blacks being the face of this thing, black leaders. There were black and white leaders in the MDC. There were a couple of whites who were also visible in the MDC. But this thing was basically a white-funded creation. So now there's a political party that's going to challenge the ruling communists, ZANU. They're going to challenge Robert Mugabe. Now, MDC then came to the fore when Mugabe realized that whites had started this political party and white farmers were behind this thing. So when Mugabe went after the farmers, the whites already had their political tool, the MDC. And there it is. It's a liberal organization and it's blacks and whites functioning peacefully. So the MDC was embraced by South Africa's mass media, all the media, even the state media, even the Jew media, even the Afrikaans media. Everybody embraced the MDC because they are now liberal sounding blacks and they are saying, no, no, this is terrible. These white farmers shouldn't be chased off the land. So this was a liberal's dream. It was a liberal's dream, okay? And they were getting tons and tons of publicity in South Africa. And even the liberal media in South Africa, they all saw Mugabe as the bad guy. Why is he going after the farmers? Even the Jew media was saying this, okay? So guess what happens to me on my website? Next thing is, on my website, I get contacted by some young blacks from South Africa, and they want to talk to me. I can't remember the whole story of how many interactions we had, but I think I asked them to send me emails of what they had. So these young blacks were black South Africans who came to me with a very interesting story. And it's actually a story that has got a link to South African politics to this day. So these young blacks came to me and these young blacks then told me that they are Zulus and they want to start a political party. And the political party they want to start, they want to model it on the MDC. So they see the MDC from Zimbabwe getting lots of publicity. And these young black Zulus say they want to start an MDC for South Africa. to take on the ANC, and they want to call it the new MDC, NMDC. So they said that they want to start this political party. And they said to me that the reason they want to start this political party is because they are Zulus and no Zulu would ever be allowed to rule South Africa. No Zulu would be allowed to rule South Africa, Zulus being one of the tribes here. And you know what? There is a certain amount of truth to that, because Nelson Mandela and most of the blacks who led and control the current ruling party in South Africa, they are of another tribe called the Khoisas, and the Khoisas and the Zulus don't get along. So these young blacks said no Zulu would ever be allowed to rule South Africa, and they wanted to start a political party. And they said to me that they wanted to have a press conference to launch this thing. Anyhow, by that time, having been involved with Jenny Williams and the CZA, Concerned Zimbabweans Abroad, CZA was the next thing getting big publicity. They weren't getting as much publicity as the MDC, but of all the informal organizations run by anyone, CZA, run by JJ Sibanda, was getting a lot of attention. And they had held press conferences, and the liberal journalists would just pour in, man. They'd pour in to listen to what JJ Sibanda has to say, etc. So they had done this thing, and when the young Zulus came, they said they also want to have a press conference. And they asked me if I could organize a press conference. So I looked at this situation and I said to them, no sweat, man. Because to me, anything that went against Mugabe in Zimbabwe or the ANC in South Africa, anybody who wanted to take them on, I was like, yeah, I'll give you some support, you know. I'll help you a little bit. You know, if you don't like the ruling party of South Africa, that's good. So I actually organized the press conference for these guys. They made up a press statement like they'd seen others doing, and they said, I need to send this out so that journalists can pitch up. And I went and I sent it out. I used my fax. I had a fax at home, and I sent out this fax. I got the names of all the newspapers from the other liberals and from JJ. And so I went and sent out a fax to everybody, and we saw what happened. Well, actually, because these guys are unknown and they don't have money, not many journalists pitched up, and they themselves didn't have much to say. And the whole thing was a huge freaking flop, but there it was. And I went and I sat there at a hotel, and these blacks were waiting, and not many people pitched up. And nobody really cared too much. A couple of journalists pitched up. After they'd given their speeches, I don't think any newspaper wrote up anything about the NMDC. And I don't have any of the documentation of the NMDC. But one thing that I did have, that I did find, was I found a very faded fax from the past, which is on the screen in front of you. And that faded fax was for a press conference that I may have helped JJ with or something, but you can still see my writing on the top. I say urgent attention, J. Sibanda and Gyros. Gyros was his second in charge. And if you look on this faded stuff, you'll see I had a bunch of media addresses. And the meeting, the press conference, is actually going to be held at the Grace Hotel. Not a very fancy hotel. Rather low-class hotel, but there it is. The Grace Hotel. And if you look down the side, you'll see Daily News, Die Afrikaner, Beeld, Die Afrikaner and Beeld Afrikaans. City Press is a black newspaper. And there was a whole long list. So that was something that I helped JJ with at some point. I don't think I attended it, but I do remember attending the one for the NMDC. But JJ at least had much more traction. He and Gyros and his guys were much more successful, much, much more successful. And he was getting onto the radio. He was getting a lot of airtime. He even got onto South African TV. Here is another thing that was produced by JJ. Now, of course, he had all kinds of supporters. There were whites in South Africa who were giving him money. There were people who he could go to print stuff. He even got money to rent buses so that blacks could go and do protests and things. This was a pamphlet that they produced. And this pamphlet was quite a good one. And what I've done is I've sized it so that you can get a bit more of a close-up view of it. So it said, did you know 11 million people live in Zimbabwe? 8 million are starving because Mugabe has destroyed the farms. That is not an overestimation. These are not exaggerations. Lots of these numbers were things that came out that other whites in Zimbabwe, in the farming community, etc. Whites were picking up all these kinds of facts and feeding it to guys like JJ. Or it was even being published by journalists. So 8 of the 11 million are starving because Mugabe has destroyed the white farms, of course. Then it says, 3 million black Zimbabweans have fled the country and live in exile. And we're talking the early 2000s. Early 2000s, 3 million had already fled. Now, most of them came to South Africa. So it says 2 million of these Zimbabweans now live in South Africa. So the blacks have knocked out the white farmers and broken white business, and lots of the whites will leave. But the immediate impact is on blacks, and blacks by the millions are affected by destroying this small group of white farmers. That's a very important takeaway from this, is the impact on these blacks. Not because we are too worried about the blacks, but I just want to show you the kind of knock-on effects that resulted by taking down this small group of whites. That these whites had a big impact on the economy. And if you destroy them, then the damage is unbelievable. It's unbelievable. It's 5,000 white farms, but millions of blacks have had to flee the country. Others are starving, etc. And then it said 1 million Zimbabwean opposition supporters were denied the right to vote in last year's presidential elections. So the MDC's people are themselves under attack. The blacks are under attack by the state itself, and they are stopping them from getting the right to vote, to take part in an election. All of these things happening. And it said 500,000 more Zimbabweans will arrive in South Africa this year to escape death, torture, beatings, and hunger. And it said thousands of Zimbabweans are assaulted or tortured by Mugabe's army, police, or militia every month. And then it ends with, one man is responsible for all this horror. Robert Mugabe, go now. Fresh elections now, freedom now. And if you look on the right, you'll see the bottom part of it. So they are going against Mugabe, which for me was like absolutely perfect. Anything to knock communists in Zimbabwe or South Africa or Southern Africa, that was good for me. That to me was already great. And then it says, South Africans, thank you for your hospitality in the time we have been in your country. Please help us to liberate Zimbabwe so that we can go home. And then it says, concerned Zimbabweans abroad. And their email address was mugabemustgo@hotmail.com. mugabemustgo@hotmail.com. And that's what these blacks were trying to pull off. And they were spreading these pamphlets as well, getting money from whites and printing these pamphlets and spreading them and giving them out. because these were quite shocking statistics. So that is what they were up to. But all of this is funded by whites, actually. White South Africans. White South Africans are actually giving most of the money for this stuff. Here is a copy of another pamphlet that was produced. Wake up, world. Zimbabwe is dying. What is happening? State-approved murder and torture. More than half the population is starving. 8 million. Food only goes to Mugabe supporters. This is true. The government sees to it that its people get fed, and it will stop food from going to blacks in the opposition. If any whites in any Western country did even 1% of the things that the blacks did in Africa, the Jews would be screeching to high heaven all across the world. But these blacks can do things on a vast scale, and much of this stuff doesn't even make it into the media. All of these numbers were true. They came mostly from whites in Zimbabwe who were feeding this information to these blacks. So food only goes to Mugabe's supporters. A clampdown on charities. In other words, charities are stopped from just feeding anybody, yeah? Imagine whites in the West doing that kind of thing. Jews would be screeching to high heaven over it. Jews and liberals would be losing their minds. Unemployment over 70%. Inflation out of control, 200% and rising. The inflation went on to becoming insane. It was out of this world. The press is muzzled. Press not allowed to print the facts. If you think that there's any kind of censorship in modern America or Britain or Europe, it's peanuts compared to what was going on in Zimbabwe. Judiciary subverted totally. What must happen? Resignation of Mugabe, free elections with independent monitors, obviously foreign whites, to come and check that there isn't crooking going on in the elections. Disbandment of government militias. The government had already created huge militias. They called up 200,000 young blacks and gave them military training and sent them out to go and beat up other blacks and kill blacks and take control. All of these things that happened, okay? If the Western world, if Western governments did 1% of these things, Jews and liberals would be screeching to high heaven, they'd all be running, they'd all be jumping on planes to get out. This stuff was going down in Zimbabwe. Return to the rule of law, and then on the right-hand side where I've got the bottom part of it, freedom of the press, independent judiciary, and no sports tours. Don't allow other countries to bring sports teams to Zimbabwe while Mugabe rules. And so this was the activism they were pushing and spreading and so forth. But in the end, of course, none of this really helped because whoever's got the guns, whoever's in power, they get to do what they want to do. All this activism didn't change anything. So this is what the liberals and others were saying should be done and that this would work. But it doesn't work when the other side's got guns and militia and they've got people who will come to kill you. So all this activism was a flop because you're dealing with a militarized communist society and they'll do anything. They'll come and send someone to kill you. They'll send someone to torture you. Or if they give it to you lightly, they'll send someone to just beat you up until you're black and blue. And that's no joke. I've shown photos of white farmers before, beaten black and blue. That is what was going on. These guys didn't muck around. And yet, the vast majority of the Western media and Jews did not really zero in on these kinds of things. But this is what was going down. Here's another leaflet that they produced. This may have been somebody else's leaflet, but it will give you an idea of how wild it was in Zimbabwe. And remember, these blacks by now have been exposed to a century of Western values and they do wild communist shit. And again, this kind of stuff, if you had to do this in America or anywhere, If you had to do even 1% of this, Jews and liberals and black Americans would be screeching to high heaven. Yet nobody even cared about this. Listen to this. Zimbabwe's torture file. Law Society meeting 2002. Zimbabwe is the worst in the world for torture. Rest assured, something like the Law Society would probably have lots and lots of whites in there. Don't imagine that blacks just came up with all this. Okay. Zimbabwe is the worst in the world for torture. Next point. In the rape camps of Zimbabwe, young girls are horrifically abused, often to punish Mugabe's political supporters. Foreign Correspondent of the Year, Christina Lamb, that's definitely a white woman, Christina Lamb, meets the victims and reveals their anguish. For 4 hours, the girl's mother and younger sisters, aged 9 and 7, were forced to chant praises to Robert Mugabe and watch Dora being gang raped by 5, quotes, war veterans and the policeman. So here are some black women and youngsters, and they have to chant praises to Robert Mugabe for hours on end while watching one of them being gang raped by war veterans and policemen. It continues, we would be better off with only 6 million people, with our own people who support the liberation struggle. We don't want all these extra people. Didymus Mutasa, ZANU-PF Organization Secretary, Population 13 million. Let me just explain that. Robert Mugabe himself said that if half of the country's population starved to death, it would be fine. And these guys are seeing to it that the only ones who are going to get food are their supporters, okay? And so Didymus Mutasa is a senior secretary in the ruling party in ZANU-PF, and he also repeats that thing. We would be better off with only 6 million people. In other words, the other 7 million can starve to death, we don't care. The only reason other blacks are even alive today is because of American and European foreign aid. They fed the blacks. They fed all the blacks. But the black leadership, including the president, had openly said, and by the way, it wasn't splashed across all the media of the world, hey? He'd openly said that half the people can die. It's better if half of them just die. Genocide. Blacks can talk about genocide, slaughtering their political opposition, and not a peep. Not a peep out of Jewry and liberalism anywhere else in the world. Here's another quote from another government official. We may have to take this whole system back to zero before we can start it up again and make it work in a new way, said Vincent Hungwe, Permanent Secretary of Local Government Ministry. So we may have to take this whole system back to zero. In other words, break everything down and we'll start from scratch. That's what they say. Then there's a guy that was beaten up. It says the secret police beat him, Job Sikala, MDC MP, on the soles of his feet with wooden sticks. His torturers took it in turns as they demanded details of how the MDC works and what plans it had for the coming months. They beat the guy with sticks on the soles of his feet, and rest assured, they'll carry on till it's bruised and bleeding and everything. They go to those lengths. And they were wanting various information from the MDC. And it says, then they tied an electric wire around a toe on each foot and electrocuted him, burning his flesh. Wires were attached to his penis and testicles. The current was turned on. Another wire was clipped to his tongue. They shouted the same questions over and over. What was the MDC doing? He tried to answer them but could barely speak. Another wire was attached to his left ear and more shocks sent down the cables. Then one of the torturers urinated on him. Imagine the CIA at Guantanamo doing this kind of stuff. Even the CIA and the US military would not be able to do 1/10 of this. If people knew about it, they'd lose their minds. This kind of stuff doesn't get mentioned. You can see back then they had email addresses at Hotmail, and then they had vigils. They stood outside the Zimbabwe High Commission for hours on end as these blacks and their supporters were trying to bring these things to various people's attention. For the record, I actually met that guy called Job Sikala. I met him. He was a member of parliament in Zimbabwe, and I met him through J.J. Sibanda. It is even possible that Job Sikala came to see me many years later looking for money, because a black member of parliament from Zimbabwe did come to meet me in South Africa, and he had a white driver, okay, of his Mercedes-Benz. So he came to meet me and he asked me for 2 million rand. I said to him, sorry, I don't have it. But I did meet Job Sikala, and it may even have been Job Sikala who came back later to ask me for money, but we're talking like about 15 years later. But it'll give you some kind of idea of the kind of stuff that was going down and how it was working there. And this stuff was wild. It was wild for like a good number of years. This thing could have turned into a war, and that was what I was hoping for. This thing had real potential. After searching on my computers, I managed to find one little piece of video footage of JJ's people, and it is from December 2002. And this is JJ's people doing one of their protests on the streets, like in Johannesburg. They often did the protests here in Johannesburg. You'd get like a couple of dozen people, and they'd have their posters and things, and they would make noise and they'd draw the attention of cars, etc. And you'll see lots and lots of printed banners and things. All of that money was donated to them by whites in South Africa. And you'll see that they are protesting there, and then you'll see a black guy talking. And the black guy who's talking is named Philemon Moyo. But that guy is the guy that I knew as the second in charge of the CZA. This was JJ's deputy, and I knew him as Gyros. And there he's busy talking. And in that little clip, by the way, in that little clip at the end, they go on to say it's December and we've had more accidents and deaths than in other years, etc. In South Africa, come Christmas time, when we have lots and lots of car crashes and people getting killed, and it's a wild time for death, okay? In the time of white rule, we used to have news reports every year with details of the various accidents and how gruesome they were, and photos, etc., and statistics. This is among the last times that the news in South Africa still covered these kinds of things. Not in detail. In this case, they just mentioned the statistics. Nowadays in South Africa, they tell you nothing. They don't give you any statistics about anything. They don't tell you how many people died, how many accidents there were, nothing. In previous times, the whites used to say, be careful, don't drive when you're drunk, etc. They don't do that anymore. They say nothing. But this little clip still has it. So this is from 2002, 23 years ago.
A small group of Zimbabwean citizens chose the second last day of 2002 to express their wishes for the new year. Now, as anti-government protest groups are banned in Zimbabwe, they now take the opportunity wherever they can.
Our pots are empty, they say. These Zimbabweans feel their pots are only good enough to make a noise, so the rest of the world can listen to their suffering.
What happened yesterday in Kenya, we need to also happen in Zimbabwe. Get a new government, a new president that can help us, as well Zimbabwe, because we're tired.
Although the group was small, they were well supported. Adolf Spangenberg, SABC, Johannesburg.
Well, it's been the bloodiest festive season in 11 years on our roads. At least 1,016 people have died since the beginning of the month.
So that was film footage of the Concerned Zimbabweans Abroad, JJ's group. They did many of these protests. And these protests, even though they were small groups of blacks, I think sometimes he only had like maybe 40 blacks, that he'd have to get a bus, put them on a bus, take them somewhere because they haven't got transport. And it cost a lot of money, and whites would have to donate that money. Everything they did happened because white people made it happen and allowed it to happen. Now, there's another event that I want to discuss that happened in the time of JJ. I've mentioned it before in other videos, but I've never actually shown you the proof of it. And in 2024, when I was busy packing to go to the USA, without realizing that my visa is going to be cancelled, while I was grabbing papers and doing paperwork and going through things in my office, I stumbled on something that I thought I had lost. In fact, even the things that I'm showing you now, these are things I discovered last year. I realized that I had a file and this stuff was lying in the file. And then when I went through the file, I found something that I was sure I had lost. And that thing is going to be the subject of a separate video because it's a very fascinating story. It's one of a kind, and I don't think you will ever in your life come across anyone, anywhere in the world, ever, who will have had the experience that I had. Something very bizarre went down, and I can prove it. And that by itself should not have ever been possible. But I want to show you in another video. And when I do the other video, I'll show you the rest of my papers to do with JJ. And among the stuff were letters to the president of South Africa, by the way, with replies. So those are among the things that I will still show you in the next one. But I thought these ones would give you an idea of what that time was like. Before I discuss the lessons that I learned and the things that relate to white people, I want to show you one more news video from those days. This is actually from a couple of years later. This is possibly from 2007. This is about the leader of the MDC. And I just want to show you so you get an idea how wild the black politics was. And again, what I'll show you, this could never ever happen in America, Britain, or Europe. If this had to happen in any Western country, Jews and liberals and everybody would be shrieking to high heaven. In this news footage, you'll see what happened to Morgan Tsvangirai, the leader of the MDC. And this, by the way, wasn't even the worst of what was yet to come. And you'll see how the South African government, because it's one communist government, one black communist government supporting another black communist government, they say, no, we have to respect the rule of law in Zimbabwe. You'll see the hypocrisy of one black communist for another black communist. Total and utter hypocrisy of a kind you wouldn't believe. You'll see that when the opposing political party doesn't suit the ruling communists, they don't give a crap, eh? And you'll see the blacks that come out from the police station after having spent some time with the cops, you'll see that they are beaten, that they are injured, they have been thoroughly beaten, okay? Just like in that torture stuff I was reading to you, you'll see that the leader of the MDC got a thorough freaking beating from the cops. From the cops. Imagine Joe Biden being hauled into a cop station in America and leaving after being beaten black and blue. Nobody would even think that it is allowable in Western civilization. But blacks can do these things. And liberals and Jews don't say much, if anything. And watch carefully, they show some film footage when the black cops put someone into one of their police vans, and you'll see the black cops have got batons, and you'll see they're busy beating people, but like seriously beating people, okay? Seriously beating them as they put them into their police van.
Thank you. Live from Johannesburg, this is E! News Primetime. Good evening. South Africa has refused to condemn the latest political crackdown in Zimbabwe. Instead, Foreign Affairs has called for cooperation and respect for political rights. This is in contrast to international criticism over the arrest of MDC leader Morgan Tsvangirai at the weekend. Today, he appeared in court with visible signs that he had been beaten up in custody.
His face horribly swollen, though steady on his feet. These are the first pictures of Morgan Tsvangirai since his arrest 2 days ago. From this court appearance, Tsvangirai and other pro-democracy supporters were taken to hospital and then back into police custody. The Office of United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said Sunday's arrests violate the basic democratic right of citizens to engage in peaceful assembly. The White House said, "We hold President Robert Mugabe and the government of Zimbabwe accountable for the safety and well-being of those in custody." And the European Union condemned the ongoing violent suppression of the freedom of opinion and of assembly, as well as other fundamental rights in Zimbabwe. Even though the situation is deteriorating in Zimbabwe, the South African presidency doesn't see the need for agency. It says it stands by what Foreign Affairs told us, that the Zimbabwean people must find their own political solution.
It has also urged Mugabe's government to respect the rights of political opponents, but there is no condemnation.
We are absolutely shocked by the South African government statement that it issued today. The statement says that the government has taken note of these happenings. What a cold way of responding to a human suffering happening just next door to our country.
Tsvangirai has vowed to intensify his campaign once he's out of jail. Mugabe's ministers say they won't hesitate to crush any protest that breaks the law. Macintosh Nzimande, E! News, Pretoria.
Quito Star Mendoza.
So now that I've given you a bit of an idea of what those times were like, and it got even worse, after Morgan Tsvangirai was beaten like that, the real thing reached its peak in 2008. 2008 was when a war could have broken out in Zimbabwe, and everything was ready for that. And then government and others came, and the blacks, these blacks like Tsvangirai, these blacks who basically were working with the white liberals, they all got screwed over. That black guy who was beaten up, Tsvangirai, Mugabe still went on to try and kill him outright, and his wife was killed, and he himself spent a good time in hospital. And South African communists just worked hand in glove with the black communists of Zimbabwe, and they just helped each other, and they averted a war. And so the whites, with their liberal setup and their blacks, they all lost, man. They all lost. Everybody lost. And part of these things is that if you want to play politics big time, you've got to be serious and you've got to have your own firepower. That is necessary. If you don't have your own firepower, then you're not going anywhere. So when the blacks are in charge, when the blacks got the guns, when the blacks got the cops, they can talk nicely and sweetly, but the white farmers went down, the whites went down. The blacks were on their side. Everybody went down. The whole thing was a loss. But let's just sit back, because the crux of this video really is about whites, actually. What did I see from that time about whites? What did I learn about white people? Well, remember now, I was running African Crisis, and so I was doing a racial website. I was constantly pointing out communism, and especially black communism, and how these black communists are waging wars against whites, working to destroy whites, and pointing out that the politics is black versus white, etc. So I actually was functioning in two worlds. I wasn't yet a Nazi, but I was a soft conservative. And I was still pointing out race. Even though I was a soft conservative, I wasn't as soft as the modern GOP or anyone like that. I was still pointing out race. And we were talking about black IQ, all those kinds of things. And I had already written Government by Deception. Government by Deception came out in 2001. So these blacks and liberals who were coming to my website, they could see exactly what I'm about. But now when I was introduced to JJ and his group, I now start hearing things from the blacks. There were other blacks as well. There were lots of blacks who were floating around. And then JJ's blacks would bring other blacks to me and they'd come with new stories of things that they heard in Zimbabwe or experiences that they had. There was all kinds of stuff that they were bringing to me. And as I was dealing with JJ, JJ and his people began to trust me. And JJ personally began to trust me a lot. And he began to confide things in me and ask me stuff. He would begin to ask me advice, and I'd give him advice. And of course, for me, anything that works against the governments makes me happy. So helping to stoke up these blacks against their own governments, that for me was perfect. And I don't have to invent lies in order to do it, because the facts speak for themselves. But it was interesting to start observing things as JJ trusted me more and more things started happening where I was involved with them. And I could already compare my personal experiences with my bit of activism compared to their experiences. And a good angle to look at this from is from the angle of the white right today. Today in the white right, you get lots of whites who are very black-pilled. They're very black-pilled about other whites. And they are saying, oh, whites are so screwed. Whites are so slow. Whites don't do this. Whites don't do that. This thing is wrong with whites. That thing is wrong with whites. Nobody does this, nobody does that. But when I was looking at the way that it was going for the blacks, I must tell you, the blacks functioned in a different world. The blacks, as well as people like Jenny Williams, were functioning in a different world compared to me. You know, Jenny Williams would say to me, we're having a meeting and it's going to be in that hotel and we're going to have a breakfast meeting and so-and-so is going to be there and you're invited. I want you to meet this person. And I must tell you, it was a completely different world to the modern white right. There was money. There was money. In the white right, we never did a damn thing in a hotel because we don't have money. We don't have support. We don't have money. With them, you could go and meet in a hotel, walk into a fancy place, really nice place, and there'd be all kinds of moneyed people around. And it was a completely different world. When I go back to my little website, working at home at night, I don't have any of those things. But when I get called to speak to Jenny Williams or JJ or something like that, I'd run into all kinds of situations where I'm seeing things that are happening for them that would never ever happen for me or anyone in the white right. Money was the first thing, but there were lots of things. Journalists. Liberal journalists, white liberal journalists, would be happy to speak to JJ, would be happy to speak to Jenny Williams. They would publish stories. People would want them on air on radio stations. For them to be interviewed on a news show was no problem. Journalists would become their buddies, and journalists would even give them information. And the vast majority of these journalists were all white. And they'd be buddies with JJ, they'd speak to him, they'd say to him, come back on a show. And then if they hear something that's interesting, they might even tell him, hey JJ, we found out this and this thing. Like one day JJ phoned me to say that a journalist had called him and the journalist had given him a tip. The journalist had said that Robert Mugabe's wife, Grace Mugabe, that Robert Mugabe's wife was in a certain hotel. He told JJ, she's in that hotel on the third floor or whatever. You guys can go there. And there I was one afternoon with JJ phoning me saying, Jan, a journalist just told me that Grace Mugabe is in that place. And there I was at work at the bank, and this guy is saying to me, I've got some guys and we've got a pickup truck, a bucky. I've got some guys and we've got a pickup truck. I want to go and kidnap her. And I said to JJ, no, man, you can't do that. You know, she's got bodyguards. They'll freaking kill you. She's got bodyguards. And if they don't kill you, then the police will come and arrest you and you're going to jail, you know. So I said to him, no, you can't do that. Go and hold a protest and call the journalists and everybody. Go and hold a protest there and call the journalists. And JJ listened to my advice and he went and he did exactly that. And then there were whites in the hotel and they saw these people protesting and they saw that they were anti-Mugabe people. And there were whites in the hotel who were cheering the blacks on. They were cheering them on. They were showing them the thumbs up. Then the security guards of the hotel unleashed some dogs on them and they had to run from the dogs and that created more mayhem. Things were so successful that JJ spent a long time on the radio that evening. They were calling him and wanting his opinion on this and that, and he had to tell them about all the things that had happened. It was one of the greatest pieces of publicity that JJ ever had, was my suggestion, don't go and kidnap her. Just go and hold a protest outside and, you know, see what happens. And it gave him probably the greatest publicity he ever had. He had a ball. Journalists were phoning him every week, either telling him stuff and passing on information or asking him to tell them stuff so that they could write about it. It was a totally different world to my website and my book. At a point, I even had to go and get some other stuff from a BBC journalist that related to Zimbabwe. And it was no problem, man. Oh, here's the stuff. Here are these copies. You can take a look at this. And everything was so different. Everything was so different to the white right. To the white right back then and to the white right now. It was a whole different world. It was a world where people had connections. People could get in touch with people who had money. People who had high positions would meet with you. It was a completely different world. Another thing that happened was that there was a very wealthy German businessman. There was this German businessman who was extremely rich and he had some kind of business in South Africa. I can't remember what. This German businessman also had big farms in Zimbabwe and in South Africa. This German businessman, obviously being a German, but more racial, this German businessman was the only businessman to stand up against the Zimbabwe government and to also warn people in South Africa. So this businessman, this German businessman, got onto some radio shows and he warned people about what was happening in Zimbabwe because he had a farm there. He had a big farm. I think it's called the Sabi Conservancy. That's what the German owned. But in South Africa, he also had big amounts of land. Anyway, one day JJ tells me that he's met this German. This German wanted to speak to him. And JJ had to go to the hotel where he is. And JJ told me how freaking wealthy this guy is. And I think how fancy his car is or whatever. JJ was way impressed with this German. Anyhow, this German then contacted me, this wealthy German. I never met the German face to face, but the German contacted me, and I think JJ had given me as a reference. So now the German wants to give JJ money, but he wants a white guy to vouch for JJ. And basically, this German told me that he wants to help JJ and he wants to know how reliable is this black eye. So I was vouching for this black eye. I was saying, no, he's reliable. You can trust him. He won't steal your money, etc. Much, much later, that black eye stole money from me. But anyway, I vouched for him. And do you know, that German gave JJ 40,000 rand. It may not sound like much nowadays. And nowadays, there are people in South Africa who earn that amount of money every month. But back then, it was a lot more money. It was a heck of a lot more money. And in terms of donations, no one would ever give you a donation like that in the white right back then or even now. I certainly never had anything like that. I heard later from JJ that the German gave him 40,000 rand, and the German told him that he must go and meet with the president of Botswana. He must then go to Zambia and meet with the president of Zambia, and he wanted him to meet the president of Mozambique too. In the end, JJ did meet with the president of Botswana and with the president of Zambia. But the president of Mozambique, being communist, did not want to see him. So JJ went on this trip that lasted, I can't remember how long, whether it was 2 weeks or whatever. He went on this trip from South Africa to Botswana, to Zambia, then to Mozambique and back. And all of it was paid for by this German. And JJ even gave me the feedback of his discussions, etc. So one of the things that I saw there was that when white people are feeling comfortable, when I think back to the time that I dealt with Jenny Williams, JJ Sibanda, and I also met other whites from Zimbabwe who had money, the one thing that I noticed is that when white people feel comfortable and they are not feeling scared, then white people are completely different, completely different. When the environment that the whites are operating in is, let's call it friendly, whether it's the whites who are sitting in the hotel rooms, whether it's the journalists doing their work, whether it is the German businessman, you see white people in a completely different way. The German businessman who's very wealthy, he organizes that JJ goes to see a president and he gives him money and says, go see the president of Botswana and you need to go and see the president of Zambia, and off you go. And he goes and meets them. Money flows, introductions come easily, access to the media is awesome. JJ never had a website. All he had was a freaking email address, but he's getting publicity. His name is appearing in newspapers. His people are appearing on TV news. He is appearing on TV news. He's doing radio shows and journalists are talking to him. Journalists are helping him. Journalists are even sneaking him secret information that they've uncovered. It's a completely different world, a completely and utterly different world to the world of the white right. It's a world that's utterly different. Nobody is coming at you, shouting at you, hey, shut up, stop talking about the Jews, stop talking about race. No, when the topic at hand is publicly acceptable and the mass media isn't going to come to hunt you down. Some of you may remember that there's a video that I did where I mentioned that Afrikaans guy who did the crime stuff in that time, and that Afrikaans guy ended up going to jail for fraud. It's completely different when the media is friendly to you. The media was friendly to Jenny Williams, was friendly to the farmers, was friendly to JJ and other blacks, was friendly to the MDC. The media wasn't friendly to me. The media didn't say, hey, we like African crisis, or we like government by deception. come to us, we'll do a show. Let's do a show, Jan. No, no, no. When the topic at hand is done in a friendly environment, it's a whole different world. It's a completely different world. And the journalists are friendly to be around with. You can deal with the mass media. Mass media is friendly. Money comes in easily. And all kinds of things which are impossible for people in the white right are possible. And it's so flipping easy. And the normal whites, common whites, when common whites are not feeling threatened, then their behavior is also different. The whites in the hotels were cheering JJ on. When JJ was having protests by the roads, whites would be hooting and waving to him, giving him the thumbs up, hooting and supporting his people. Those blacks could do all kinds of things, and they could get money for everything. Everything that JJ did was paid for by whites. They were getting donations. People were giving the money. They just had to go and ask. Oh, you see, we need some money. I need a bus because I want to have a protest over there. But my people don't have transport of their own. I need a bus. And people will go and gather money. And the next thing you'll know is JJ's got a bus and off he goes. It's a whole different world. It was a whole different world. And when white people are not in a state of terror and fear, and when white people are not intimidated and they feel comfortable, they are totally different. Whites are awesome. And all these blacks would never have functioned for a day based on money from blacks. No, no, no. Other blacks would not give them money, but whites gave them lots of money. Lots of whites gave them money. And whites who had businesses would give them money and would donate to them and help them. It was a whole different world. It was unlike anything in the white right. And as I've watched the white right over the years, and as I myself have seen the kinds of things that happened, the nasty things that happened to people, just like that white guy who did his crime website. I remember his name now. He called himself Neil Watson. His real name was Yuan Ace. And the only reason he got into trouble was because the newspapers started turning on him, started looking for things, and people were focusing negative energy on him. But these blacks had a ball. These blacks were able to get all kinds of publicity, and big publicity, to millions of people quickly. And so the real thing is that when white people are comfortable and white people are not intimidated, and white people are not black-pilled and intimidated, but the real issue is fear. When white people are not afraid, then white people are totally different. And I must tell you that it shows me how nice life could really be. Life could be really awesome. And things like the media and all these different structures and journalists, all these things could have been so pleasant. It could have been so pleasant, so nice, if it wasn't for the fact that you've got a hostile entity, you know, the enemy within, jury, the enemy within that has already set everything up against you without you knowing it. That all these structures, which in modern times have failed us completely, newspapers, media, journalists, that if those structures had just remained pro-white, life would have been a breeze. Lots of things would never even have become problems. And we'd all have had so much fun. And any problem that comes up could have been solved so easily. JJ never wrote any books or did anything important. He didn't produce any particular material that was important. But when I wanted to sell my book, I had to run around and I had to go and look for a rare company that would even dare to put my book on the bookshelves. All the places that I approached didn't want to have anything to do with my book. I could not even put adverts for my book, either in the newspapers or on radio or anywhere else. I wanted to place my own adverts at my own expense, and nobody allowed that. Even saying to them, "What are your rates? I'll pay your rates. This is the advert I want to place." No media ran any of my adverts. I even have a radio advert that I prepared, and nobody would even print it or air it. And these were white people I was talking to. But when the thing you're doing is acceptable, is publicly acceptable, then you won't have any of these problems. So I couldn't even pay for adverts for my book. And eventually I found one or two places that would sell my book. But otherwise, all these things were denied to me. Nowadays, when I look at the media and how the media has taken a beating and how the media is dying now, to the point where Donald Trump is now inviting influencers. He's inviting influencers to take part in White House press conferences. That to me is fantastic. Now, that should show you the decline of the US media. And the US media and all the media, not just the United States media, all media is going down. And they will continue to go down. The South African newspapers have virtually all collapsed. There's hardly anything that's being printed anymore. Very little. And of course, I am personally very happy with this. I'm very happy to see them going bankrupt. I'm very happy to see that thousands, maybe tens of thousands of journalists have lost their jobs. I'm very happy with these things because these fucking snakes, these fucking anti-white snakes, were working against us and we didn't know it. So make no mistake, the collapse of the media, I'm very pleased with it. But you know, it didn't have to be that way. It didn't have to be that way. If the media was friendly to whites, then life would have been a ball for all of us. We would never have had a problem with all these many, many things that have gone wrong in the world. It would have been as easy as in the old days, writing a letter to a newspaper or writing a letter to an editor, and he selects your letter and he prints your letter in his editorial or something. Things used to work so nicely. And it showed me that even in this modern screwed up world, that if there's a little bit of space where white people feel comfortable, where white people aren't scared, then white people will fork out money, white people will help other people, white people will be generous. All kinds of fun things would happen in life. All sorts of things would be really nice and pleasant. And that's the difference between the liberal world and where the white right is. It's not the fault of the white right. The white right hasn't made a mistake. It's not that the white right's doing anything wrong. I'm just pointing out that due to jury and liberals and assorted scum having turned on the white right and wanting to destroy the white right, that life is a misery for the white right. But I just wanted to tell you that when you're out of that and when things are better and you are in a friendly environment, like let's say a pro-national socialist environment, a pro-racial environment, a pro-white environment, when you are in an environment where you are received in a friendly way, where you are received with respect and they're not looking to destroy you, then life is completely different. Then everyone has fun. Then if a journalist were to approach you, you'd want to speak to the journalist. When the Jews came after me in 2020 and 2021, they had journalists coming at me, man. And those journalists were looking for stuff. They were looking for dirt. I could see it. I could easily sense it in the tone of their emails, in the tone of their communications to me. And I was very wary of journalists. But when JJ Sibanda was dealing with journalists or Jenny Williams was dealing with journalists, the journalists weren't out to do hatchet jobs on them. And so for them, journalists were fun. But for me, when the Jews came at me, then journalists are no longer fun. Then journalists are something you're afraid of. And I was very wary of them. And a journalist would suddenly drop a message on my phone and say, I represent this media company. And I want to ask you about this thing that's going down, this court case. But I can see, no, these people are no friends of mine. And I tried to deal with some of them and I saw how they handle you. And it wasn't pleasant at all. And I was very wary of them. Very, very wary of them. And I must tell you that it's just a different world. And it shows me that the only thing that's making the white right's life unpleasant is the endless viciousness and the terror campaign and the hate campaign that comes at white people in the white right. Juries constantly trying to bugger you up, juries trying to constantly destroy you. Their henchmen, the liberals, are also out there to attack you. It's a very unpleasant place to be. It's very, very unpleasant. And that is why the white right is so black-pilled, because you're under constant attack and they're trying to destroy you and they are looking for ways to wipe you out. If they can't destroy you with media, they'll try and cut off your funding, report you to somebody in the hope that they close your bank account or other account. It's a nasty world to be in. When you're in the white right, you are in the most unpleasant place you can be in life. There's no place that you'll ever be when you have a job or you do something else. There's no other work, I suppose, other than being shot at when you're in the military. But in terms of the unpleasantness that you face, it's a constant struggle. And it wears down people's spirits and people become afraid. And the people who are trying to put out content are becoming afraid. And the people who are even donating become afraid to donate. And people are watching their words in case they end up in jail or in the court. It's a horrible world to be in. It's nothing at all like that liberal world. And that time dealing with Jenny Williams and the blacks was a time when I could see what it is like in the liberal world. And look at Jenny Williams. She ends up meeting Barack Obama. Not that he is somebody I'd like to meet. But I mean, she gets to have the attention of the President of the United States. It's a completely different world to my world, where nobody would welcome you and people are constantly trying to destroy you in one way or another. They're waiting for any opportunity to come at you. But it was very insightful to see how nice it is, even for normal whites. How do normal whites behave when they're in a friendly environment? And normal whites are awesome in a friendly environment. When normal people can speak to you or can give you money and they don't have to worry about what will happen to them if they support you, then things are fun. Everything is fun. Even journalists and the media is fun. It's a whole different world. And the generosity of whites and all the things that went on, it was a whole different world. But the key thing is, we in the white right, we live in a world where we're under attack. And that is why it's unpleasant. And the unpleasantness affects everybody. It affects the people who are the creators of content. It affects the supporters. It affects even just people who want to see the content. Everyone is intimidated to some degree or other because of all the vicious attacks that go down on people. Thanks to jury and white liberals. So that is the actual thing that makes everything unpleasant. And then people are scared, people are afraid, but it's because the environment has been created that way. It's not the fault of the white right. It's because of our enemies. Our enemies are trying to make us give up. They're trying to make everything as unpleasant as is humanly possible. If they could find a way to legally kill us, they would. And that is why the white right is not a fun place. But people in the white right need to remember that. They need to remember that we're trying to get a message out, but we ourselves are not in a fun space. And nobody is in a fun space here. So that is why it's unpleasant. It's not that whites are unpleasant. Whites mean well for each other. It's the intimidation and the viciousness that is thrown at us. You say Hitler and then people will attack you. Oh, Hitler, Nazi, evil, blah, this and that. But when whites are in an environment where they are calm and they feel safe, then all is good. So you mustn't look at the white right and the problems of the white right as how whites will be in the future. When whites are free again one day and whites can say what they want to say, think what they want to think, and do the things that they feel comfortable with, you will have lots and lots of nice experiences. All of us will have a lot of nice experiences. all kinds of pleasant things will happen and things will be so easy. And you'll see that herd behavior kicks in. And once herd behavior kicks in and the values have been set, then everybody behaves in that way and it's fun and it's nice and it's pleasant. The real thing to go for is power. The real solution for whites is power. Political power, maybe even financial power, control over businesses, control over government. Whites need power. And when you have power and the power is controlled by us and the power is friendly, then life is going to be a ball. And then a lot of the stress that is inherent in the white right will be gone and people can be happy and perky and that kind of thing. Don't let the behavior of people in the white right make you think that white people are broken. It's not like that. Most people just want to be in a friendly and safe environment and then you'll see how awesome they really are. But there's a lot of struggling and fighting that's needed to get there. And another thing is, it's not that journalists are bad or newspapers are bad or the media is bad. It is because Jews went and screwed all those things up. That's why it's bad. The concept of journalism, the concept of having a mass media, there's nothing wrong with it. The real problems start when an alien entity gets in there and messes with that thing. And so lots and lots of things in life, whether it's politics, whether it's anything, crime, you name it, all the things that we perceive as problems now are only problems because jury infested it, jury turned it into a weapon, and it's been used as a weapon against us. That's all. There's nothing wrong with democracy. There's nothing wrong with anything. There's nothing wrong with Congress. There's nothing wrong with lawyers. It's just that all these things were infiltrated and turned into garbage, turned into slimy snakes that are waiting to attack you. That's all. That's all. And if it wasn't for white generosity, those blacks would have had nothing and achieved nothing. And I mean nothing. And if I, doing my stuff, could have been in an environment as friendly as what those blacks were experiencing, I could have gotten my message to millions and millions of people within about a week. It would have been easy as pie. It would have been so easy. It didn't have to require 25 years of work and still probably as many years as I've got until I die. It just shows you how screwed up the world became because we let human garbage get into our society and all kinds of hideous festering evils grew inside all of our societies until everything is sick. I must tell you that whites will have to be much firmer in the future when it comes to who you allow into your society. Who should you let into your country? Who should be given this job? Who should be allowed to do this and who should be allowed to do that? White people need to take control of those things in the future. And if you take control of all those things, you will find that life is absolutely a ball. It's pleasant. We'll all have fun. We'll talk to each other. We'll laugh. We'll tell jokes. We'll smile. It'll be fun. People will say, hey, dinner's on me. Let's go to a restaurant. Well, how about let's all get together. We go to that hotel. We have some fun. Those things are the kinds of things you can have when the environment is friendly. The white right itself could have a ball. We could have fun. We could enjoy each other's company. Do fun things, nice things, if we were in control of our societies. And that's the real goal, is we need to get control of our societies. That's important. So I thought I'd just share that with you of the difference between that world and the white right. The white right is the hardest place to function. It's the hardest place to function. And if you've managed to survive in the white right, pat yourself on the back. But I've got one more story to tell you from my time then, and that story is an even bigger story. Thank you very much for listening today. I hope that you learned something new today. Look after yourselves and take care. We'll be chatting again soon.
on, my friend. If you don't see the end, if you don't see the top, don't stop. We know you'll win. Every fight.